I would like to introduce Sylvia. She would like to be called Sylvie. She has 46 years of recovery. And she, yes, exactly. And she came here all the way from California to tell you her story. So with that, I'm just going to let you listen to Sylvie.
Thank you very, very much. Thank you. I'm so grateful to the people that put this together, that got me here, and I'm just grateful. I am a recovered addict, and I also have alcoholism in my recovery. And my name just happens to be Sylvie. And I'm grateful to be here. I truly, truly am. What wonderful shares have just, the ones that I heard this afternoon. Fawn, my roommate that was picked for me, and the last gentleman, I didn't get his name because I wasn't right in here at the beginning. But like I've always thought in the program, I always think about when they say, you know, like Jimmy O or whatever, and I just thought to myself, so it would just be just the first name, you know, who knows about an initial, a letter, whatever. But what the steps I have, let's see, a quick little thing of what I was like. I am the oldest of six. And this was in South Central Los Angeles, and we were probably in just the neighborhood there, probably the only three Mexican-American families in a totally African-American neighborhood. And to say the least, we were poor. And from the beginning, it was very, very, I don't think I ever even tasted about any kind of happiness in my life. It was truly for the eight of us, and the oldest of six, I had four brothers. And little by little, I jump around, I don't have a kind of a thing here. They all were able to follow the example of someone in Narcotics Anonymous that works the steps. And so one by one, my four brothers followed. It took the first 2 years for the first one to come, and then it took a year for the next one. Then there was 9 months for the next one and 6 months for the last one. So that was five of us going, as you've heard, when there weren't that many Narcotics Anonymous meetings, to both the Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous. And anyway, you've heard enough about that. For right to up now is out of those five, there's myself, and one of the four brothers. The other three passed with double digit, almost 30-some years, with what usually gets the addict and alcoholic, which is the liver. And one passed away, or went to get the, what do you call it, when the transfer. And he had a cold, and so they couldn't do the surgery. And while he was waiting again, he passed away. There is so much that has happened in my life, but for me, it's really not my person of myself. I did know Jimmy. It was, I came to what then was my first meetings and I'm getting ahead of myself here a little bit. I'm kind of nervous. I don't know why, but nervous with happiness and joy and excitement. It's not a scary kind of a thing. It's just exhilarating to me to be here in such unity and thought, no matter how our backgrounds are, no matter how we found this program or how much we used. None of that. It's just this spiritual progress that these 12 steps bring about, which is really the only thing that had me able to be relieved of the merciless obsession. As I said, my thing was heroin and alcohol. The alcohol was before I got together with a man, and we went straight to hell, really. He was a complete, total junkie. There was no alcoholism involved in his life at all. And it was like a Bonnie and Clyde kind of life. And so for 5 years, that's how it went. And there was not enough of anything. There was not enough heroin. There was not enough money. There was not enough of anything. So the one thing that had differed for me from my alcoholism is that with drugs, you have to become a thief. You have to become a robber. You have to be a bigger liar than I was just to begin with, because later on with the steps, I really realized that what the real dis-ease was for me was fear, and the 100 forms of fear that had me have to have this escape, and it fit real quick, very, very early on. My father had been battered, and so I got it, being the oldest one, being battered and beaten. And the first of any thing that I had to drink, because what I had the realization of is that when my father drank, and he drank the whole weekend, sobered up Monday, got to work for the 6 kids that we were, and I got to realize, when he drank on the weekend, I didn't get beaten. And so I got the real early idea that there's something in that. Somehow, I don't get hit. So, I want some. I want some of that. I want some of that that is going to take away the fear. Obviously, at 8 years old, I wasn't thinking that. But that's how it was, and that's how my life was, that there was so much fear and so much anxiety that I needed, totally, completely needed, to be out, to be out of it. And then this hookup with this man was very, very violent, very bad. And not for me, on me, but what we were doing and what we almost were killed by the police or whatever. In fact, winding it up to the end, to because the rest is my story would be like a dime store novel. What makes it so magnificent is, as a result of the steps, the one that has all power is what has made it completely a different story. And oh gosh, now I forgot where I was a few minutes ago. Somebody help me, what was I saying? yes, the end of all of it. the robberies, the whole hell with nothing being enough. It got down to the end with heroin to have to actually have two spoons to even stop the shakes the next morning. It was like, it was horrible. There was just not horrible then. There was just not enough. Until this ending came of a robbery that had happened, and we got away, and we were in this motel waiting for this other person to come and pick us up and get on down to Mexico, and then supposedly on the way to South America. And what happened when we were in there, all of a sudden, it was like a round kind of a motel thing in East Los Angeles. And all of a sudden, there was just red lights blinking, the sheriff's cars, everything was just all outside. And they started, what we learned later was the man that was going to pick us up got stopped, and he told them where we were. I think they call him a snitch. But anyway, even that, you know, like to the last degree that you don't do something like that, like with your people, and say, no, I'm sorry. It'll come to a point, and everybody is going to have to give it up at some point, because it's us. It's me. So, what then, in actuality, I remember we got on our knees, not in any kind of prayerful kind of a way, but somehow to keep the bullets, I don't know how, with the bed to get to us, because we were just going to commit suicide by police, really what it was. And I tell you, I was so relieved. Finally, I was going to get put out of this misery of all the fear and the shame of abandoning my two children, not being able to do anything, but just constantly needing to be out of it. And what happened was we heard knocking, knocking, knocking. The police were coming this way, this way, this way, this way, this way, this way. And then they stopped. And they left. And the only thing I can put any kind of to it is that these police thought all these doors were done. These police thought those were... And we were the only room that they didn't come to. And if you talk about anti-climax... That was really it for me. A little later, we got to be put in jail. And he was sentenced to 10 years to life. He had been in Folsom. He was a three-time loser and went back for 10 to life on three armed robberies. And I was in the Los Angeles County Jail on three counts, 1 year each, and then they put them together. And I was in Los Angeles County Jail about two and a half years. And that's really, looking back on it, was I was put into the padded cell at one point when I just kind of blew it about something. And I was in the office, and they had to call. I'm bigger than most Mexican American women are, or Chicanas as we were known there in the in those days. And they called the goon squad, and that famous chokehold that they give, you know, that can just put you out. But in the room, you can't be in there with any clothes on. And when I came to from being put unconscious, the shame that came over me knowing that those policemen had taken off my clothes, because all you have in there is just a hole to do your business when you have to do it. And but in that place, in that padded cell, for the first time in my life, something happened. And what it was there. It really wasn't a voice. Because when you hear that still, small voice, well, if it's still, how can you hear it? But it's a feeling deep within. And what I heard or what I felt was,
you did this to yourself.
And it was like, it was amazing. Because being poor, being of Mexican descent, having the way I felt, it was always them, those people, the police, all of that, just blaming, blaming, blaming. And I was never, ever the same about blaming anybody from that situation that happened in that padded cell. I was not the same. And that's where the 12-step program found me. Not that I cared about it, had ever heard about it, knew anything about it. I was really interested in the women. There were three women that came there every Tuesday. And just to talk to you, just to talk about anything. They weren't trying to do anything, but they were from AA. At this point, like I say, Narcotics Anonymous wasn't able to be clear enough with any passing of being able to go from, because most of us had records and had been to a jail. So it's been a little while, not that long, that addicts are able to go in under the hospital and institution program. I know that because when I got clear and out and was in the program, I wanted to go back and give. And the captain at the women's on the 13th floor there said that it would take 5 years. Usually it's only 1 year. 5 years for me to be able to come back to the meetings in there. And I did. 5 years later, I did show up there. And I was very, very grateful to be able to do that. And it is a good thing to be able to do is go back in. I also went back to the Alano Club, where the woman that used to come in there. And I walked in the club, and she just kind of looked up, and all of a sudden she burst out crying, and she came running over to hug me, and she said, because she'd been doing that for years, she said, "You're the first one that ever came here," out of all the ones that she had, you know, talked to. Because it's, in the time that I was in the L.A. County Jail, the addicts, the women addicts that did go out, you know, now they're, you know, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, you know, you got good food, you kicked and all that kind of stuff. And they're going out, and all of them, I used to listen, all of them would say, "I'm never coming back here, never coming back here." And for 2.5 years, I saw them come back, go out, come back. Because in those days, you were arrested for marks. If you just had needle marks on your arm, it was like 60 days in jail. And so inside, I just thought, my God, it's not, you can't stop this. You know, the same thing's going to happen when I go out there. And it was like hopeless. It was really like a desperation and a hopelessness in there. And it didn't lead me there. When I came out, I only thought I was fearful. When I was in there, I want to get out of here. I want to get out. That's all I want to do is get out. When I got out, I was scared shitless. Because I knew if I ever went back to heroin, I'm dead. It just couldn't be. And what happened was I said, okay, I'll sell it. I won't use it, I'll just sell it. So the connections that my husband had had, okay, 2 ounces went to get. And when they were in my hand, my hands just started shaking. And I knew there was no way I could sell that. There was just no way. I dropped it like they were hot coals and just ran like a crazy one. Just ran and just had no idea what was going to happen. Anyway, that was like the ending of all of it. The rest would be just actually my story. That man that we were together passed away last year, clean and sober. He passed away in Santa Monica in the hospital, and that was the first man. I was 15 years old when we got together. I was going to a reform school in downtown Los Angeles, and he was cruising the streets. And anyway, that got us together. He went on. I went to juvenile hall at that point because of statutory rape is what they were putting on him. He was already a felon. So that was not a good thing to happen. But anyway, he came out. When I used to go to San Quentin to visit him, I talked to him about the program and what was going on. He didn't want to hear about it, so I stopped talking about it. But he could see the change. And the last 2 years of the 10 years that he was in San Quentin, I mean, he was to Folsom and then he was transferred to San Rafael. And he had gone to meetings. For me, when he came out, after 10 years, now everything's going to be wonderful, all this kind of stuff. No, it didn't happen. And so I said, you got to leave. You got to go. Because he just could not stay clean. And we parted, divorced amicably, and that was that. And in the latter part, just before he about 10 years, we were very friendly. I was just so happy for him to finally be clean. It was really, really something. I lived in San Francisco. He was in Santa Monica, Los Angeles. But it was such an inch. And I've been married for 25 years to another man, an alcoholic, Irish Catholic alcoholic. And that's a real kind of a wonderful kind of a ride on that. But I'm so happy with that stability about it. But my point is about what I was like and what happened is more in this book. Woody, my ex-husband, had wanted to write the book about our life together. And it took 15 years. And the year before he passed away, which was last year, 2007, he finally got his book published. And I said to him, I thought to myself, I started to read at the beginning and it was too much. I mean, it was just so what it was like. I haven't read it all the way through. I can't. And the title that he picked was Hope to Die. Just a hope to die junkie. Anyway, I'm glad he got that wish that he had had. And when I listen, you know, to all the shares, I just see how beautifully coming together the program of the 12 steps has such unique niches for people to fit in. There's just a niche for everybody. Someone that can share, someone that does, you've heard it. Fawn, when she was up here, did a beautiful, beautiful of the past and it coming up and keeping that, being able to talk about that. And each one of us is just such a wonderful, unique individual. The way there came a time at 6 months clean and sober, I became very suicidal in my thoughts. I'd been going to meetings and I could not, because I couldn't talk to anybody. well, I didn't have anything to say much, but it was very fearful to me. And so I would just listen. I'd listen so hard I'd get headaches. And then I started realizing that you go to a meeting and there's a speaker and they'll say something and sounds good and you feel good, and then you go to another one and it looks like you're hearing that person saying that was bullshit that this other person says, and it's just like everything is just so different. So I'm thinking, if I can listen really hard, I'll get it, because of the fear of asking about a sponsor. And today, and for many of the years that I've been sober, because there is no human power that can stop anybody or get anybody going, it really is a spiritual progressive way that has to happen as a result of these steps. And I have had the merciless obsession to take any heroin or alcohol. It's gone. It's not any part of my thought any longer. And that's what the steps do, as you do them continually. I happen to do them on a daily basis, just the way I needed to drink and to shoot heroin. It had to be on a daily basis. So when I got it from that point of 6 months clean, wondering, am I going to stick my head in the oven or if I'm going to get a gun and shoot my brains out? I couldn't go on. It was like hopeless. And what happened is I went to a meeting and saw the name of the person that was going to be sharing. And I had gotten a resentment the first time that I had ever heard about this person, because they just seemed to be just talking about, things that I couldn't understand, and how other people were talking about him. Like, oh man, this is it. You got to hear this guy and all this kind of stuff. And I had been so betrayed my whole life through, put myself in the position, not knowingly, that if I can't trust myself, I can't trust anybody else. I mean, it just didn't make sense to me. So I'm thinking, so that's the end. If that's what you have to do, if like you have to really like be a groupie or something, I'm going to fail. I can't do it. I cannot do it. And that night I heard the steps about after the first three steps. See, that's where I was stuck, and that's where most people get stuck, because it seems like this cavern now. 3 to 4, write your inventory. And somehow, if it doesn't get done immediately after the third step, you're just hanging on, just waiting. But what happened was, when this person, I was able to ask the question about what, because they were talking about a written inventory. And in page 20, you got so many Narcotics Anonymous books out now. I never know. It was the first one that finally came out, and on page 27, there's just this wonderful thing about the fourth step that most people are so fearful and don't make it beyond it. And I obviously needed a spiritual way. Not that I couldn't even say the Lord's Prayer in meetings when they did none of that stuff. So this wasn't somebody coming looking for, you know, God or anything like that. But what happens in these steps is a spiritual way. And that was the thirst. That was the thirst for me within, to have this. And that is the message, really, of the 12 steps. Even the young man that was sharing just before me with the woman at the beach, and her thing was that this was the 12-step program was open to anybody that wanted to do it, you know. You don't, and in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, Bill also said that this was a program for anyone that needed and wanted the steps. Not, you couldn't go if you weren't an alcoholic or a drug addict to the meetings, because that is the thing that you recognize and relate to. And there has to be that relationship. And to me, my only little thing is today now. I mean, it seems like anybody can come in. There was a woman sitting in a meeting the other day, and I smelled alcohol. And she said, well, it's okay because I'm in OA. And so I don't have to worry about it. I said, but you're sitting in a meeting where people are abstaining. You know, that's their whole thing. It didn't mean anything to her, so I'm just thinking, it's weird. You know, it isn't. But I'm thinking here also myself that it doesn't matter. Can you stop it? Can you throw somebody out without, you know, no. I just keep doing the steps, get rid of more of my judgment about anything and everything that seems to me you're not doing it right, and stay with my own stuff that I have to do, which I do on a daily basis, of the 12 steps. And the only one, I do all of them every day, except the 12th step if I'm not in a meeting. That to me is what it is. If I'm alone in my house, it's not happening because there's nobody there. And my husband and I together have, in our apartment, the both of us together have 82 years of clean and sober between the both of us. So, to me, the really foundation, yes, I have a raucous background that got me here, almost dying so many times, actually clinically dying on the operating table with in a cancer operation. And that was when I was 4 years sober and clean. And no problem has ever happened after that. That was in the 60s. So I know there is a power greater than myself. And to be able to do these steps, which are simple, kind of a different way, and I'm not up here to teach, I'm just to get 46 years and going, being happy, joyous, and free. Is not, I can't do that by myself. I have to clean out these fears. And I'm telling you, there's been probably in the last, I have not been doing the steps. I did them yearly, because that's like kind of what it was where I came from in Southern California, the first 20 years of my sobriety. These last 20-some, a little over 20 years, have been on a daily basis. Very simple. Very simple. Upon awakening, well, I go to the bathroom and do whatever, get my coffee. And at the top of the paper, I just put the one that has all power, if you can't call it God. I have fear. I'm resentful at so-and-so. I have fear that they're going to do this. I have fear that they're going to say this. I have fear, because underneath all of the resentments and fears that we're told about, that we read about in our textbooks, that's what needs to be freed. It's not a thing. There's once to have written it and then ask God to remove it, and then, has been talked about here, it was some years before I got meditation. Then 20 minutes of meditation, twice a day, no big deal. And when I first heard about it, I said, what do you mean doing the steps every day? It is so cleansing and so good. And it is the 12 steps And I'm so grateful that I was able to grasp and develop that way, regardless of what is said. The first time I shared this in a meeting, because it's new. See, and with us, anything new comes along, it's wrong. It's wrong, you know. But that's human nature. That's just the way it is. And this one guy, he got up and ran up towards the thing. I thought he was going to hit me. You know, it was just red, just really, really angry about someone saying they're doing the steps. So I lasted 6 months without them, just with the fellowship, with whatever, because I wasn't talking, all of that. But that could, the fellowship and people can just go so far. And then that feeling of hopelessness and despair. And I'm grateful to have been so sick and tired of being sick and tired that when this came about and happened, that I could grasp it and develop it and be able to go through anything and everything that has come in this life, these past 46 years. It hasn't been all peaches and cream, but I know whenever something hard comes, it's really a good experience. I may not know it at the moment, but when I'm able to come through clean and sober without any thought, of taking anything, I mean nothing at all, and to realize that this free thing, these steps, this program, the camaraderie that happens, the unity that's here for us, we're blessed. We really are blessed. There's people that kill themselves with problems and things out there. Oh, especially right now. I have no idea how. I know that in 1929 they jumped out of windows and stuff. And it's not easy, but it is simple for us with this program. We've just got about 5 or 10 more minutes, and I just want to put my little, this one little thing in of my talking points that really wind this up and have me realize, and maybe one of you out there realize, of how, what a wonderful, beautiful thing that we have. And we have the recovery that we're able to do, the unity that comes, the service people, you heard them talking, especially to Fawn at some time, to have this realization that we are recovered. See, I learned when I had that surgery, when they put you in the recovery room, at one point when you come out, you're recovered. You're not in the recovery room anymore. So I am recovered. It has been 46 years, but I would say probably in the first year, the merciless obsession for heroin or alcohol was lifted, was removed from me by this one that has all power. So for me, we're had the opportunity that we are recovered by the power of this loving God of Narcotics Anonymous. Recovered from what? From active drug addiction. How do we restore to sanity on a daily basis? I.e. a daily reprieve. That's what we get with these steps. A daily reprieve from the resentful insanity that would have us take a drink, a fix, or a pill, or smoke a funny-looking cigarette. That's the message. That's our message. And it must be served to every NA member. Serve it on a plate. How? We serve it by reading at group level at each meeting. How it works. The 12 steps by those of us in fit spiritual condition. Every one of you addicts in this room right now is in fit spiritual condition in this consciousness. And it's an awakening. That's what this spiritual condition is. Spiritually awakening as the result of the 12 steps. Sharing our experience, strength, and hope. Thus, serving as an attraction that happiness and joy can be experienced and the freedom from the bondage of self-will that doing the steps accomplishes. So therefore, being able to be more in accord with the unity of the purpose of NA, which is to carry its message of the 12 steps as the central core of the text contained in our books. And even that little pamphlet that Fawn showed, I've got one too. And within the principle of anonymity, which understands that no human power can relieve this insanity of drug addiction, but that God could and would if sought. And the greatest service then is to be an attraction as living proof that there is one who has all power. Therefore, empowering the suffering real drug addict to be in the work of the steps is to become then happy, joyous, and free. Thank you.
Thank you to Sylvia, and I want to thank all of our speakers that spoke tonight. Yeah.